Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities, all you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2008 film Milk, directed by Gus Van Sant. Brother Jay, this is on your list.
It is.
Tell me, just take us away. Introduce us to Milk.
I missed this when it was in the movie theater. I rented this, I think. This was just one of those, I didn't know much about Harvey Milk. I didn't know much about the story. I knew how it was going to end because I knew enough about the George Moscone assassination. And I don't know why I knew that. I just did. So when I watched this, I had some real mixed emotions, but I was glad to have watched it. But it was a pretty powerful movie, but also Sean Penn did an amazing job. So did James Franco.
When did you watch it for the first time?
2012, maybe 2013.
Okay. And you watched it this time, and Jesse had never seen it.
He had never seen it,
and he didn't know how it was going to end.
No.
Because
even though they start the movie by telling you the end of the movie, but he felt that that was a little sleight of hand.
Well, kind of. So what did you think about watching it this time?
I was amazed at how many people I recognized were in it. It was a beautifully shot movie. It was amazing. But that's Gus Van Sant. So, but the story moved. I didn't feel that it was really lagging. It kept my interest. Even though I knew what was coming, it didn't lessen the impact of the ending of the movie. For being a two-hour plus, this moved along pretty decently, I thought, considering how long a time period it spanned.
I thought so, too. And I think I'm going to have to add Sean Penn to the list of actors that I don't want to like, but who are very good. Like Sean Penn, when I was watching this movie, he became Harvey Milk.
Yeah.
And whether or not he looked exactly like Harvey Milk or it was just such a departure from what I've seen him play before. And I know intellectually that Sean Penn is good. I mean, I've seen a lot of good Sean Penn movies, but it's hard to separate sometimes the actor from the person.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Boyfriend Jesse was asking, have we seen any other Sean Penn movies? And I told him, well, I don't believe that he and I had seen any other Sean Penn movies. I've seen other Sean Penn movies, like I Am Sam and Dead Man Walking and Mystic River.
Well, what about Fast Times at Ridgemont High? And
I hate that movie.
Yeah, me too. Well, okay, there's a little bit of I don't like. It mostly involves Phoebe Cates and Jennifer Jason Leigh. I saw it at a very influential time in my life.
I had a boyfriend at the time that used to watch it recursively. Come home Friday night, drink, watch that movie, and unwind. And it baffled me. To this day, it baffles me. Like, yeah, anyway.
Okay, let's, let me just take a quick peek at the Sean Penn filmography. By the way, I didn't do any notes for this movie.
I took some, but not a lot.
Yeah.
It's hard to, because it's part documentary, part drama. I mean, it's hard to,
Well, for us, I'm anticipating talking more about real history than necessarily the acting in this movie.
It's hard to talk about the acting in the movie because it was all good as far as I was concerned.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there was a bad... I don't think there was anybody who was over the top or was terrible. I think everybody was really good.
Oh, yeah. Here's another thing. I don't ever want to like James Franco, but he was good in this.
I don't know what you have against James Franco. I like James Franco.
In recent news, this will not be evergreen if you listen to this years after January 2019. But in recent news, there was a group of Catholic high school boys on a tour of Washington, D.C. They were actually going on an anti-abortion march, but they managed to be hanging around at the same time. There was some sort of like black Muslim march and also a Native American march, and they kind of converged. Most sides say that it was actually the black Muslim people that were just sort of egging everybody on and being assholes. But because these kids are, you know, what, 17 years old, roughly, they are by definition assholes. So there was a very stark picture on the internet of this Native American guy beating a drum and this white kid with a MAGA hat and a big smirk on his punchable face. And the picture did not tell the story of the event, probably, but the picture was very emblematic of a certain thing. You know, basically asshole teenagers wearing MAGA hats like Sid Vicious would wear a swastika to basically piss off the grownups. Or maybe not. Maybe he was wearing it unironically. I don't care.
Okay.
But he had a punchable face, and we had a conversation at work about whether having a punchable face is really, should that be a crime? And I suggested that no, but it's not an asset sometimes. For instance, James Franco. Also, the fact that he was probably stoned or drunk out of his mind during the Academy Awards makes me feel bad for Anne Hathaway and feel like he is a punk.
What quality is it that gives you the agita that you want to punch him in the face?
I don't actually want to punch him in the face.
No, I understand. I realize that face to face you wouldn't.
Yeah,
but
of course not.
But if you thought you could and get away with it, you might.
Well, no. I mean, I don't really advocate violence at all. It's just that he's one of these people that is, like, unlike Sean Penn, he is pretty. But he also seems like kind of a bro and also seems like he's sometimes wacky artistic. I think you could probably buy a James Franco book of poetry, which again, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It just is not it's just something that appeals to me.
I thought I was the judgy one.
Oh no, I'm totally judgy. This is totally a failing of me. I'm not the hero.
Well, I don't think it's a failing. I just think it is what it is.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to understand it because I don't share the feeling. So I'm trying to see where it's coming from. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think probably a little bit is because I think he got hated on. You know, basically for the same reason that this type of actor. Like, he became a tabloid thing, I think, for a bit. I can't remember what brought him to tabloid prominence or social media prominence. But, like, Sam Rockwell should be the same guy as James Franco, right? I mean, they basically have a lot of the same qualities. But all I see is Sam Rockwell being just a fantastic actor and kind of goofy. And I see James Franco being a good actor who is kind of bro-y. I think that's what turns me off. It's the friend.
Go watch Vice.
Okay, well, that's the thing.
Have you seen Vice?
No, yet? No, but I want to see it.
Yeah. Sam Rockwell plays W.
But is it fun? Is it a good performance? I'm not saying is it accurate.
No. It's a good performance because if you close your squint just a little bit and you listen to it, he is W.
Well,
but
okay.
Also Christian Bale, I mean, now we're discussing an entirely different movie.
No, it's okay.
Christian
this
Bale
is how
also
this works.
Was did an amazing transformation as Chaney and was Chaney. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Uncannily. To me, Christian Bale is the guy that I don't want to like, but
yeah.
I do.
Uh-huh. Well, now, because of you, Jason, not you, listener. You, listener, are innocent in this. You, Jason, every time I look at Christian Bale, I see Reba McEntire's face.
You're welcome.
Yes, because he has no
Kermit
top lip.
I'm so glad I could share that. I had to have somebody else join the misery party. Come on.
It's amazing.
Can't do this by myself.
And now it's just unmistakable. You can't unsee it. So.
Yes. So everybody out there listening, if you look at pictures of Reba McEntire's mouth and then look at Christian Bale, they've got similar lip structure, which is that they're lacking lips.
Maybe we should do an A-B or something on the Facebooks.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll see if we can do it.
Although Dunkirk got quite the reception.
Did it?
Yeah. There's been a conversation. Dougie and one of his... So it's been back and forth. So it was nice.
Yeah, Dougie. Wake up, Dougie. Dougie's grandfather was evacuated from Dunkirk. And Mother Anderson wanted to know... her question to me when I said that was... well, does he talk about it? The grandfather? I said, I don't know. He goes, does he talk about it? Like, I have not talked, like, had a running conversation with Dougie about this, but we can inquire if you'd like.
We've never actually spoken with Dougie.
Yeah. Well, and her experience, this is where the question comes from in her mind, is that...
nobody talked about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, our World War II veterans in our family didn't talk about what they did in World War II.
Yeah.
So, and it's not like they were in concentration camps or anything. I mean, you know, they just didn't talk about it. And maybe soldiers don't talk about stuff. I don't know. I'm not. Okay. So, sorry. Back to Dr. Sean Penn while I have his filmography up. So, we have Fast Times at Ridgemont High in 82. We have Bad Boys in 83. We have Falcon and the Snowman, 85.
Oh, Falcon and the Snowman. I forgot about that. That's a great movie.
Yeah. Well, we have, I'm going to skip over Shanghai Surprise with Madonna, his girlfriend, or maybe wife, I don't know, in 86. But then we have Colors in 88. I remember that being fun.
Yeah.
We have Carlito's Way in 93.
Yeah.
We have Dead Man Walking in 95. We have The Game in 97.
That Michael Douglas?
Yeah. People love The Game. We have to go back and revisit that one. Let's see. 97, we've got She's So Lovely with Who Became Robin Wright-Penn. We have The Thin Red Line in 98. Hurley Burley in 98. A mammoth thing, I think. Let's see. The Weight of Water, I Am Sam. We've got Mystic River in 2003. 21 Grams in 2003. The Assassination of Richard Nixon, 2004. That should have been our list for February.
No.
We have The Interpreter, 2005. All the King's Men, in 2006. We have Milk, 2008. I hear that's pretty good. We have Fair Game, 2010. Did he win an award for that? Not sure. We have... Let's see. We have The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, 2013, which listener Connie says is not as bad as you might think. It's the remake with Ben Stiller.
That's a low bar.
Yeah, well.
Not as bad as you might think.
Yeah, she liked it. Let's see. And then in 2019, he's playing Dr. William Chester Minor in The Professor and the Madman. Which was a really good book, by the way. So back to Milk here. So yeah, so Sean Penn, this may be what our second. I mean, we've seen a Sean Penn movie because he directed.
I think this is the first acting role in his foray to our podcast.
Yeah, because he directed Into the Wild, to greater or lesser effect. I mean,
and who else was Into the Wild?
Yes, Emil Hirsch, who hams it up here is Cleve Jones.
I actually thought for a moment he was a young Elton John.
Yeah, I wasn't sure who. All these actors do a pretty good job transforming.
Yes.
So, should we go on the synopsis just to at least skip through it to talk about some history?
Yeah.
And how much history do you want to talk about? I mean, how much does this movie... Because we're talking about a gay rights activist and one of the first gay men to be elected to public office, maybe the first, right?
He was.
Yeah. And who was assassinated while in office. So there's a history part of it. And I think I knew about Harvey Milk from both the fact that he was a victim of assassination. So it falls into my, you know, murder, death, kill reading in my childhood about, you know, all sorts of crime. Also, he has that connection with Jim Jones. And I found Jonestown and the People's Temple fascinating.
I share that fascination.
Yeah, it's just it's a bizarre story, but
it's unfathomable.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And then I saw The Life and Times of Harvey Milk, which is the award-winning documentary. And that was a really good documentary. So I knew most of the story of this movie, and I hadn't seen this movie until this week. And I was a little concerned because I thought, oh, this is, A, it's going to be a downer. And B, if the acting is bad, it's going to be a bad downer. But even though it was kind of a downer, I thought it ended on a hopeful note. I don't know whether or not, again, I don't have the experience you do with whether, like, how big a figure Milk is. Like, the fact that Jesse didn't know the story tells us something.
I thought the movie has a sad ending, but I didn't see the movie as a downer. And the reason why is because it really did show a lot of the positivity that he fostered and kind of tended and grew. And really just kind of forced, if you will. They didn't give people the option. There was no, well, I'm just going to fade quietly away. When he arrived, he arrived. And he was in for the long haul. I knew the story from the history because it was lore in the community when I was coming out. So it was very top of mind because things were getting more visible. The gay community at large was getting more visible, more audible, more proactive, more political, which can trace its roots largely to Harvey Milk and his push for equality and rights and the establishment of those rights starting at a local level. And that is one of the best seeds for change is realizing that local level politics matter, sometimes more than national politics.
Yeah, grassroots support.
Because it starts movements. And then when you get momentum, you can go through. So for me watching this, it was difficult to watch because I can see things that I remember growing up that I saw that were not anywhere to the scale in this movie, but I saw things growing up where I realized that I was different and I was going to be treated differently if I didn't either stand up and demand I was treated equally or if I was silent. Having also gone through the 80s and 90s and having people die of HIV and AIDS related complications added another layer of scary. But advances in medicine and advances in politics have changed the current generation for the better. So they haven't had to face the same struggles because although in many parts of the country that are perhaps a little more conservative, maybe the center, it's still not very acceptable, but moreover, it is acceptable. It is being accepted. And so the younger generation isn't even a thought that there would be discrimination or any kind of negative connotation. It just is what it is. So boyfriend Jesse's experience when he came out was very different than mine because his perception and his interactions were like, okay, so you're out, whatever, which traces its way back to the foundation of people pushing for rights and acceptance. So I think that the newer generations can trace their, you know, the gratitude back. And I'm not putting myself in any of that. I'm just saying that I also benefited from that. I didn't get as great a benefit in my generation as the current generation. If any of that makes sense.
Well, okay. So, you know, when Will and Grace started their reboot or whatever, not reboot, but like their continuation,
Yes. No, it was a reboot.
Yeah, it was really hammy. And it there was it just to me it was a lot more politics, which is fine. And I mean, it's, you know, I always liked Will and Grace. I thought it was funny. I like the characters were, you know, were over the top, and it had both like what, Harry Connick Jr. and Woody Harrelson and you know, other people who were great. But there was a particular episode on the first couple, maybe even the first one on reboot, that I think Will was dating a very much younger guy, not unlike Brother Jay. And it was funny because there was a lot of the comedy was based on that, you know. And one of the at one point, I remember he mentioned something like Will was going on about how things had improved or something, and he mentioned something like, you know, like, Yeah. And Will's like, oh no, you don't understand. I need to tell you about gay history because you're not appreciating all the struggles. And he starts with, the first there was Stonewall, and then blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, he kind of went through it. And so that was kind of for laughs about how, you know, kids today. But again, not being part of this world, but observing it, I don't know whether he could in his life, but there are kids today that can come out when they're like 9.
Yeah.
Or in, you know, junior high or in high school. And it's not a big deal. I mean, maybe a big deal because it's always a big deal when these things happen. But, but it's not. I mean, it's just it's like, oh, OK, well, yeah,
it isn't catastrophic like it used to be.
Yeah. And it's not a huge. Again, everybody has to bring their own bags on the trip. Yeah. I mean,
it wouldn't be the struggle. It's also geographically sensitive.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the current generation should build a shrine, but I think it's good for them to know that there was struggle and there was sacrifice. And when my views on things versus the current generation's views on things are divergent, but that's because I remember, you know, having people call me names and make fun of me and threaten me, and you know, I remember all those things, and that's not so acceptable these days for the better, but also that's society matures. I knock on wood, I hope, and so maybe that's a psychic trauma that the current generation doesn't need to bear. So it's good to know your history, but then how much history do you engage in? Do you engage to the point where it's painful, or do you just give an overview and say, just be aware that others sacrificed for the freedom you have? But that's kind of what the whole country's about.
Well, and this movie to me, I mean, obviously it's, you know, it's about the life of Harvey Milk. Well, it's about a section of Harvey Milk's life because it touches on, and I guess, well, I guess I want to go through the synopsis a little bit to get us started here, but there's definitely some stuff that I want to pick your brain about.
Sure.
So I thought the opening credits were actually really effective because it was like this old black and white newsreel footage of men being rounded up by the police for being in gay bars. Yep. And everybody's all, you know, everybody's all dressed like regular old people, and everybody is turning their heads away from the camera because, of course, they don't want to be filmed in this bust or whatever. And the police are like, you know, like frog marketing these people in front of the cameras on purpose. So it definitely was a time, you know, again, this is like the crackdown of the homosexual bars and the general notion of, you know, this being like a depraved choice and these, you know, got to get rid of these pervs. Then we have the device of this film, I think, which is pretty cool, is that Harvey Milk is narrating his own story into a tape recorder in a letter to only be read upon his assassination, which I don't know whether or not such a letter exists, probably does, but that was in his mind. I mean, he was a political figure who was controversial and had gotten death threats at this time in 1978. But it starts out when Milk was in New York, right? Or on the East Coast.
Yeah, it was New York.
Yeah, he actually worked for an insurance agency or something, and he was like a buttoned up suit guy, totally in the closet. I mean, gay as Christmas, but
it was 72. So yeah,
you couldn't be out, or he couldn't be out at that time. So he meets this younger guy. By the way, the meeting the younger guys is a Harvey Milk trait, as it turns out. So he meets Scott Smith, who is James Franco, who is like more of a hippie. And there's a lot of PDA in this movie, which at first I'm like, ooh, is it going to be all the way this? But then it's like, yeah, it's fine. I mean, after you kind of got used to what this movie was going to be, it's like, oh, okay, I get it. They're not doing it just to be controversial.
It wasn't in your face over the top just to show it.
Yeah, it wasn't like fetishistic. It was just like, hey, this is about gay men, and gay men like love each other and have sex, and we're not going to show them having sex, but you can certainly show them around the house. So yeah. So then he goes on this little journey to get to end up in California.
In the Castro.
Yeah, he ends up in the Castro, which was not really the Castro that it became.
No.
I mean, you know, it was one of the things that they point out, especially when we get to like Cleve Jones, is, you know, Cleve Jones starts out as sort of like a hustler, prostitute. You know, here and there.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Milk tells him is, hey, you know, you're cute, you know, like to have you around, but you're screwing up our neighborhood. You know, you can't be part of the solution and be like turning tricks. Like, that's not cool. But of course, Cleve was like, well, fuck you, old man. I'm, you know.
Yeah.
I'll humor you because you're an old man, but I'm going to Europe. I'm fine. I'll be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Milk and Smith, Penn and Franco, open up Castro Cameras, where it's a camera shop, a little tiny camera shop. And, you know, he wants to meet the neighbors, and there are very intolerant people. And here's what the politics of the time were, is that there was, I love the fact that Anita Bryant gets to be the villain, because, you know, she's a villain, on the wrong side of history, let's say.
Oh, yes.
Because, you know, Anita Bryant, singer Anita Bryant, became the voice of the homosexuality is wrong and evil and needs to be eliminated. Not necessarily like putting people to death, but you must not have homosexual teachers, for instance.
Yes.
And you should be able to fire your homosexual employees just because they are gay.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as it turns out, even in our little local town, you know, we grew up, at least from my perspective, yours may differ, but I feel that I grew up in a pretty liberal household or with pretty liberal relatives, but in a conservative city, in a very conservative state. I mean, a liberal city, I suppose, sort of, but in a very conservative state.
I would say half of the city is liberal, but only 40. I would say it's 49% liberal and 51% Baptist.
Well, so, that's the thing, is I don't even think there are that many liberals necessarily.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly, well, we had the Anita Bryants in our hometown, which is Dr. Jerry Prevo, a local Baptist minister.
Yes.
Who made his bones, who came to town in order to be able to discriminate against renting apartments to gay people in Anchorage, Alaska.
Yep.
Yeah. And he has ridden that pony, well, up into his very old age. Anyway, so being gay was dangerous because you could be attacked for being gay, and you were not going to find help from the police.
Nope.
And so that already is a scary feeling. And if you don't have a sense of community, you are alone and screwed. And so,
it was also political enough that if you needed help at a local level, but were already blacklisted because you were gay, the politicians weren't going to help you.
Oh no,
because they couldn't afford to be guilt by association.
Exactly,
they couldn't be caught. You know, with the riffraff, though, those people,
prostitutes, drug users, and gay people are all in the same bucket.
For some reason, the words "those people" is like the quickest white hot way to just set me off those people.
Yeah, so it's taking you to a time and a place in California, which now we think of San Francisco as like, I mean, like, you know, I'm sure that the Rush Limbaugh Middle America thinks of San Francisco as like the gay city. Even though it turns out you can't live in San Francisco unless you're a millionaire these days. So the like Haight Ashbury starving artist San Francisco scene is long gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so the Castro wasn't even the Castro at the time, but
nope.
So he is fostering community because that's what he wants to do. And since he has come out of the closet, he's come out hard, as you said. Not, well, you didn't say that, but and then, okay, I guess we can skip ahead of time a little bit. Toward the end of his life, when he became his most political, as an activist, he was telling his group of people that being in the closet was a problem. Like, you have to be out of the closet. The theory is everybody knows somebody who's gay, right? So, but if you don't know you know somebody who's gay, then you don't realize that you actually have compassion for gay people because you already know them. Like, that was right. Part of his whole thing was that the only way they're going to get this anti-discrimination bill passed or the pro-discrimination bill defeated is to tell the regular, everyday American straight people that, oh, you already know us. We are already part of your community. You already like us and respect us. But if he was basically telling gay people, if you're not out, you're part of the problem.
Right.
And that seems to me, at least, to be a very controversial thing.
Yeah.
Let me not let you answer your question to pour one more thing here.
No, no, that's fine.
One of the villains in this movie is the publisher of The Advocate. And again, I haven't read The Advocate, maybe ever, but wasn't part of The Advocate, like, they actually outed people?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that has consequences.
Yeah, not a practice that I believe in. I think it's actually pretty reprehensible.
It's dangerous. But okay, now, in 2019, do you think that a celebrity, somebody with a public figure, owes it to the world to be out?
This is something I'm very torn about. So, first of all, it's nobody's business. It is really nobody's business. Except that we don't live in that world. Because if it isn't somebody's business, it's easy for us to get discriminated against or injured or hurt or ignored or denied. So the problem is, while it's nobody's business, if you don't make it somebody's business or you make it your own business, then you might get marginalized or ignored. So I don't think anybody has to come out if they don't want to. But I have said for decades now, that's because that's how old I am, I was pissed when George Michael finally came out. And I love George Michael, don't get me wrong. But I was pissed because he denied it, and then came out. I was like, you know, you just did damage to a generation of kids who were too ashamed to come out and saw you deny it, and now you come out. When you could have been a poster child, so to speak, because he was, you know, he was a young adult, but he could have been a great influence and a great role model, example. Now, I suspect it wasn't entirely his decision. I suspect that there was some Sony involved or some record company involved and some publicist involved. But those are the kind of things that I think are really damaging. So I have a double standard. As an individual, it's nobody's business. But once you take on the specter of public life, you have a certain responsibility. And so I know everybody deserves privacy, except that when you step into the limelight, you give up a little bit of that privacy. That's the cost of fame. So you either have to be responsible and say, it's none of your business, which is acceptable, or, yeah, I'm queer. What do you want?
I mean, okay, so with the George Michael example, And I guess this doesn't have to be a big discussion. Well, I guess it is anyway. So I don't know why that, I'm hemming and hawing. Okay. So with
that ship has sailed. Yeah, it's going to be the gay cast.
Okay. Well, with the George Michael discussion, you can see it being, okay, and you're right. Like his record company or his studio or whatever says, his management says, oh, you can be queer as a $3 bill. But in order to continue to be played in middle America radio stations and in the entire countries of some foreign countries, you cannot be out gay because right. then they will ban you. I mean, if you think the Dixie Chicks didn't get paid because they made a stupid and yet pretty innocuous comment overseas one time and then didn't back down in shame. Most of middle America like stopped playing Dixie Chicks songs on the radio.
Yeah.
So imagine, you know, all of a sudden, yeah, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go guy maybe never would have been able to get to the level of stardom he became.
Right.
Had he not,
played the game.
Yeah. So, again, I don't know. I mean, there's a whole thing, like the whole Charles Barkley thing about just because you're famous doesn't instantly make you responsible to be a role model. If you say, my name is Charles Barkley and I'm not your role model, does that let you off the hook? Like, I'm going to get drunk and gamble and get thrown out of bars and swear and make dirty jokes. And that's okay because I am Charles Barkley and I am not your role model. Well, okay. So let's get back to a little bit of the movie and then a little bit of these things. So there are here are some things that are going on in this movie. So Harvey Milk becomes politically active, but also he has a little bit of baggage. First of all, and again, I don't know enough about, because it's been portrayed, the gay community has a different feeling about like casual sex than a lot of the straight community. Or maybe has a history of that, or maybe is labeled unfairly that because those are the people that were busted in the bars. It's not the guys who are out on Brokeback Mountain that get busted.
That's a fair point. But, I have an anecdote to that. But, this all borders in that realm of too much information.
Yeah.
In my generation, when you were dating, you would have sex with them before you ever would take them out. Because if you weren't going to have sex with them and it wasn't good, there's no point in going out with them. Because you didn't have a big market to choose from, and the consequences of dating somebody and having to deal with all that crap, you didn't want to do it more than once or twice. So you really made sure that you wanted to be with that person, where the opposite is true. So you have sex with somebody and then you get to know them, which is bass-ackwards for some people, but works out for some, as opposed to I'm going to date, and then we're going to have sex. So that's why I think the gay community was very... they had the perception of being promiscuous, not necessarily promiscuous, just that they wanted to get that out of the way because, you know, A, I've been in the closet for 10 years. I'm making it for lost time. Or B, I got to get this right the first time because I'm not going to have a second time. Because once my family meets this guy and doesn't like him, it's going to be just a ration of hell. So
another fear, especially about the teachers. Because in San Francisco is an issue of whether you can fire teachers for being gay, because we need to protect our children from the predators that are gay people, because gay people are by definition predators. You know, that's all well and good, you know, to say, well, that's clearly not true. I mean, that makes no sense, really. And yet Harvey Milk had a lot of young guys. He dated like young guys the entire time. Again, I don't know, you know, how normal that is, whether it's like there are plenty of examples of like older men, younger women. Increasingly, there's older women, younger men. But it's been, I guess, historically, old men, younger women was acceptable.
Yeah, I think in the gay, and again, I'm speaking for the gay community, but I have no qualifications because I'm not involved directly in the gay community other than I'm a big fagula. But I would submit that part of it is that because we fought, some of us fought with small Fs and some of us fought with big Fs, but we fought for our place in the community and we struggled to be able to find people and we struggled to find quality people, and that isn't always as easy in certain places. When you find somebody, you're looking for somebody, not specifically down to the age demographic. You just find somebody that you're compatible with and fuck everything else, figuratively speaking. You don't limit yourself because you're going to pick what you want and what is available, but what is also you think is the best for you. And so it's freeing in some ways that we just, it's all abandoned. It's like, we don't like, I tried not to date younger guys, 'cause I worry that I will get the perception. I will be perceived that I'm some kind of like, I'm like some predator. But really, it's about, like, I don't give a fuck. Like, if people don't like it, they don't have to like it. But at the end of the day, it's none of their business.
Yeah, okay.
And so I think part of the coming out process is the Big Little Finger to the straight community at large, which is counterproductive in many ways. But that queer contingent, that uprising queer contingent that has the anger and the angst, which is what started the movement, that's what founded it. And so that's part of where that comes from too, that rebel streak, that we're here and we're queer, and you better be used to it, because we're decorating your houses and we're making your food, and yes, we're teaching your children.
Well, it also, and again, this is not necessarily, it's addressed a little bit in the movie, but, you know, the idea of, intellectually, like, if you don't have to, if you don't think, actually, I don't want to think about anybody's sex life, really. I mean, I don't want anybody I know or anybody I work with, I'm not thinking very hard about their sex life, because I don't care. And I don't see it, because we don't see these things in America. I mean, you don't see it anywhere, probably. But if you just discard the whole act of lovemaking choices that people make, which, like I said, if you poll everybody, you're going to come up with some weird results. But so if it's just a matter of, gay people are fine. I mean, I'd rather hang out with Will than Jack. For the same reason that, and I'm not saying that, well, I guess I am saying that I would probably feel more comfortable just because characters are sometimes draining. Although I've got plenty of straight friends who are characters that are also draining, personality wise. In some cases, I am that friend. As a nearly 50-year-old white male, I don't have a lot of right to talk about other people's struggles, because I certainly have not struggled in that way for sure. But, part of the coming out gay movement thing seemed to be very flamboyant on purpose. Like, we are queer, we are here, get used to us, we are going to be in your face.
Yeah.
You know, and that's on purpose, and that's fine, but it's also confrontational, and so it's also scary.
I think that was on purpose. I think it was, we're going to overwhelm them with our presence, and we're going to scare them enough that if they don't give us power, they're going to be afraid we're never going to go away and fade back into the limelight, into the background. We're just going to be always in their faces. And so some of that was scare tactic. It was effective too.
But it also opens you up to being targeted. Like, yes. And, you know, violence is a real thing. Like, again, being a white guy, I don't think very much about violence in my own personal life. Like, I get to be unconditioned white quite a bit when I'm being, like, not on alert. Because if I walk to my car late at night, I'm not particularly concerned about getting attacked. Unless there's some obvious threat. But if I was a woman, or a person of color even, or a gay person, it seems like I would be more of a target, and I would have to think of those thoughts.
Well, I grew up, I shouldn't say grew up, because I didn't go to bars until I was 22. But when it was conscious when we went to bars and we went out that we never left alone. You never go out the door alone. You never go to your car alone, ever. That was just a thing, because, you know, that we all had that one friend that went out to the car in Anchorage and then it was the Blue Moon or the Raven. You know, we all know the one guy that went out to his car and got beat up. because he was by himself and there was somebody in the parking lot who was just like, I'm going to teach a queer a lesson. So I refused to be afraid, but it definitely perfumed my behavior, but it didn't curb my behavior, if that makes any sense. Yeah. Like I was never afraid, but I was always conscious.
Here's something I learned from you that I had no comprehension of before you actually mentioned it one time. And now you hear about this in terms of, you know, men and women dating, you know, man goes, we ask a woman out to date, he thinks the worst that can happen is she like turns him down and that's humiliating. But a woman goes out with a date with the man and the worst thing that happens is she gets killed. Well, you had the fear of, you know, so you go out with somebody for the first time, you know, maybe it's like a wonderful social thing, love connection, or maybe you're just being set up to be attacked.
Yep.
Which I'm like, why would people go to those lengths to have that happen? And it's like, ah, shit, it must happen because it happens in the movies occasionally. And also, kind of like illegal aliens, kind of like people of color, like people who don't speak English as their first language, people from other cultures. They don't call the police when they get attacked. They've already been attacked. You've survived the attack. You're not going to go to the police, who are not going to care about you, probably blame you for it, which is a humiliating experience. So these things aren't reported. And if they're not reported, they don't happen.
I was laughed at and told to go away when I tried to file a restraining order in Anchorage against my boyfriend at the time.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you'll never try to get another one.
Well, it just left me. I was angrier and disappointed. I refused to be afraid, though. I was young and had that naivete about my fear that. Fear was a bad thing, so I never even entertained it. I did. I mean, that was a rough thing. I mean, that was a rough thing because it was a, you know, I had to have the guts to go and initiate that, and then to be told, "Go away! Like, we don't. You're wasting our time. Go away! Like, deal with your little pansy ass boyfriend yourself." Which was the words that he used. But luckily, I worked at a place that I had many friends. And I had established myself as being a great guy. So when I went to security that I worked with and said, this is what's going on. And I hope that it's not a problem. And I hope that it doesn't become a problem. But I work on a sales floor and it's a public place and I can't stop this person from coming in. And security said, give me a picture. I'm going to keep an eye out. And once he showed up at work and wouldn't leave, then they trespassed him. And then they didn't even question it. So that was validating. But yeah, would I go back? You know, you're right. Would I have gone back for another restraining order? No.
Yeah. No. Wouldn't be an option anymore.
No. Because yeah. that's the fear. That's the factor. But luckily now you have things like social media and Twitter and Facebook. So if that shit happens and it's if it's in Portland and that happens, you better believe that I'm going to go to Twitter, even though I don't have a Twitter account, but I'm going to use every social media device in my realm to be as loud and obnoxious and rattle as many cages as I can. And I will be the worst fly in the ointment. Now, if I'm in Topeka, Kansas, maybe that's not such a great thing, but, you know, it's harder in smaller conservative areas, but places are changing.
Oh yeah, no, it's in Alaska, in Anchorage at least, you should have no such problem if you went to get a restraining order now.
I would hope not.
I'm pretty confident you would be treated with the respect no matter what your domestic relationship was. But things are codified. Things are in law to make sure that happens.
Well, and not the least of which now is because there's lawsuits.
Yeah, well,
and, wrongful death.
Yeah, well, also, you know, another thing, again, scattershotting, I guess I should put a little disclaimer. Folks, this is going to get real gay.
Like I said, it's the gay cast.
Yeah. Well, it's a, you know what? You don't like it, skip to the next movie. But, okay, here's a question for you.
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Well, okay, so things have changed so much, and yet not, like, you know, so after Harvey Milk was killed in 1978, by the way, he died for this, you know.
Yeah.
It's still, like, President Barack Obama could not say he approved of gay marriage. It took Uncle Joe Biden, the vice president, to basically boldly ignore any kind of sensibility and just blab about how it was fine by him. He sure, well, why would anybody have a problem with it? So on one hand, I'm not necessarily a fan of Uncle Joe Biden, but on the other hand, he certainly has got his good points. A very Trumpian kind of way where he's just like, I'm just going to say what I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, at least I'm honest.
Yeah, exactly. So
I'm crazy.
All of a sudden, Hillary Clinton and the Obamas have to kind of pucker up and say, okay, well, even though we've been for, but domestic partners, not marriages. Yeah. Now it's like, now like a couple years later, fucking A right. It's like, and it took grassroots stuff.
Yeah.
It was the grassroots Harvey Milk level outrage about it that forced, that changed the world. Because if you had gone to, not the world, but America, because if you had tried, if people had gone out.
Parts of America.
Yeah. Well, if you had gone out with, to say, okay, you know, we are going to have, let's just make it all friendly and we'll just have, we'll pass this law and everything. It wouldn't have happened. It would have just been kicked down the road for the same reasons that politicians don't want to get stuck in that. Like, everybody likes to have, like, I think this is one thing where we're going to see what happens lately, but or soon, but the abortion debate, my perception is Republicans love the abortion debate because it gives them something, or conservatives, that if you're anti-abortion, it gives you a solid position. But if, since the law is that abortions are legal within certain parameters, they'll always have that battle to fight. Well, if they ban abortions, they no longer have that battle to fight.
Yeah. There goes all their fundraising.
Yeah, exactly.
They'll have to go back to guns.
Well, yeah. Anyway.
But you're right.
Yeah. But let's just keep it to one controversial topic at a time. So let's skip the abortion and guns and go right back to gay talk.
So you're right. And I thought the movie did very well to show that Harvey was not, he didn't hide that he was who he was. And he made it a point to make sure that just people, he made people accept him, whether they wanted to or not. He's like, no, boils and all, this is me. And you're going to take it because I'm going to give it. And this is what you got. And he was pretty persistent and wouldn't, I mean, he lost election after election. And finally, you know, it took a while, but he got there. But he still refused. He's like, nope. But he was the master politician. This movie did the good job of showing that once he was elected, he was playing politics publicly. But behind the scenes, he was like, no, riot, go out, like stir shit up, kick it up, like burn it down. Like, I am the politics face, but you guys have to keep doing what you're doing. You have to still, you have to absolutely be activistic.
Yeah, well, that,
I made that word up. I don't
know. Well, no, that's a big scene at the end where in the beginning of his political career, he is the one that literally stands on a soapbox with a bullhorn and says, my name is Harvey Milk and I want to recruit you.
Yeah.
And he's the guy with the bullhorn. He's there leading the march. In fact, in some cases, it didn't matter where they marched. As soon as he got a bunch of people, they just needed to march because otherwise it's going to go bad. So it'll break bad if they just stay around there chanting, because eventually the police will come in and start kicking heads. So if you could march them someplace and then have a big old thing and then break up, it worked out for everybody. But yeah, when he got elected, then he was telling Cleve Jones, like, you have to have the bullhorn now because we need that. You need to march on the Capitol or the Assembly Hall or whatever it's called. So that I can come out as the newly minted gay politician and try to fix the problem.
Right.
Which, you know, and I thought it was interesting to show how Cleve Jones wasn't maybe very good at it at first. Like, because they had Harvey Milk, they didn't have any backup Harvey Milks.
Right. Well, you know? Why would you?
Well, and because...
And nobody else was... I don't want to use the word brave, but I don't know a better word. Nobody else was necessarily motivated or self-motivated to want to. They were happy to lend their efforts, but nobody wanted to be the face. Because having a face in the game is what ostracized you and blacklisted you.
And opened you up to violence, as it turns out.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and also opened you up to having your... I'm amazed his business didn't get forced out. That's really the
or
most...
burned down.
That is the most amazing thing to me, is that his business didn't suffer any consequences. Which is a testament to the makeup of probably the area they were in.
I think you're right. I think it quickly became, if it hadn't already been a little bit like this, it quickly became sort of a gay neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have numbers on your side. It's more like the straight guy is going to get edged out. And that's actually another thing where this is a good example of him when he first started kind of neighborhood organizing, is that he said, look, and then got in with the unions to boycott Coors. That was beautiful. It's like, look, we spend money. So I tell you what, let's not spend money at places that aren't nice to us, and let's spend lots of money at places that are nice to us. And that way we will teach people that it's in the interest to be nice to us.
Yeah. Our money spends just as green.
Yeah. And how, well, I mean, they've done this for teachers, but I think Uncle John picked me up at the airport in Juneau once, and he paid for his parking fee with a gay bill. It was like a dollar bill that had like a little stamp on it, like you know,
pink triangle.
Yeah, basically, it was like showing how far the gay dollar travels, right? Mm-hmm. And the guy made a comment about it, and I didn't understand. And he's like, "Oh, he told me that you know, he told me how it worked." I'm like, "Wow, that's weird," but yeah, it's hilarious. And I know that teachers used to do that too, where they put a sticker, like an Apple sticker or something, on the money.
Yeah.
Now nobody uses money anymore, so you can't really make that statement as broadly as you could before.
Yeah, you can have your Pride Visa card. That's about it.
Again, now it's I think we had told this story before, but I will tell it again. For Drew's graduation, I wasn't able to get off in time to see Drew graduate from college, but I was able to get off a couple days later for leave because that was my brand new job at the time that I had to fight for vacation time. And somebody actually came back a week early from vacation to allow me to spend a week to go see Drew and travel with you guys in a car back to or in an SUV back from Missouri. But the part of this during GayCast, I will retell the story of arriving at the airport, being picked up by you or by mom and dad. So from like all night and morning of flying, showing up at St. Louis like at noon or one or something, having mom and dad pick me up, take me to Six Flags where you and Drew and Jennifer were all kind of hanging out, and sort of, you know, being kind of bleary eyed from the travel. I'm just kind of taking it as it comes. And it was also 97 degrees. Drew at one point says, "Notice anything strange?" I'm like, "No, I don't know what you're talking about." He says, "Look around." And I'm looking around. I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Look at the people." So I'm looking around and I see lots of T-shirts with slogans on them. And the one that stood out to me, of course, was the like absolutely like beautiful sort of Belinda Carlisle in her prime kind of aesthetic girl with a white T-shirt with big black letters that says, "That's Mr. Dyke to you." And we learned that it was like Gay Pride Day at the park.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, at the time.
No.
Really?
No.
Oh, no. Come on. You had to have known because it was...
I didn't.
It was, as the kids would say 10 years ago, it was obvi. As soon as Drew pointed out, I was like, "Oh yeah, this is Gay Pride Day."
So here's the thing about me. I just had a conversation with mom about this. Sorry, mom. I don't get obvious things, subtlety or even obvious things. They sail right past me. That's why I have, I think I had a conversation with Drew about this a couple weeks ago.
On the podcast where it got kind of deep.
Yeah. Well, like people joke with me and I think they're serious, and people are serious with me and I think they're joking, and I have almost 100% track record of being wrong. So no, I didn't even notice. I was oblivious.
It's funny because probably the most dramatic evidence of it being Gay Pride Day, I can understand why you wouldn't see, because you and Jennifer were waiting in line to go on this ride that was basically like a pendulum.
Yeah.
Where you guys were in like
165-foot free fall.
Yeah. So where you guys were like dropped on a cable, and it went back and forth and back and forth and back and
the
forth.
The sky screamer.
Yeah, there was a lot of screaming. Well,
that was all me.
But yeah, while you were waiting in line very nervously, the rest of the family was waiting around in line, just kind of waiting for you to do your thing. And one of the groups that went ahead of you were these three guys that were obviously gay, who, as they were swinging, were like shouting out like gay slogans, and in a fun way, not in a bad way.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
Those were the guys that by the way, the guys in front of us were like fighter pilots. They were military dudes, and they turned around and looked at us, and they looked at Jennifer, and they said, you know, are you excited or are you scared? And she's like, I'm not scared. Jennifer was like, I'm not scared. And they're like, oh man, we fly fighter jets and we're scared. Yeah. And she was like, oh my God. And I'm like, we already paid. We're doing this.
Oh yeah. Well, that's the other thing is that, have you seen Top Gun lately?
No.
It seems like Maverick and Goose could have a very close relationship.
Well, there was a rumor, you know.
Yeah,
Tom Cruise.
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah. Maybe it's just being too smiley. Maybe that's the problem. Me, James Franco and Tom Cruise are too smiley. And I don't know. I guess Sean Penn is more like, he just seems murky. Kind of like an asshole. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So back to
the movie.
Back to being gay and other things I don't really know about. But have opinions.
Well, so back to the movie. Harvey makes a joke. You know, if they kill me, I might get the sympathy vote.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is, like, it seems like after he came out, he really came out. He came out all the way. And right. He wasn't going back, and he was going to be political because this is a political, this is a life issue. So you're going to be loud, and you're going to get noticed because you're not going to be ignored. Or marginalized, maybe, is the better term. And, you know, they don't stress this, I mean, a little bit in the movie, and spoiler, there's a tragic sort of A Star Is Born moment in the movie, where one of his partners commits suicide. But that happened a couple times in his life, mm-hmm. where former partners had killed themselves. And that's another thing that happens. I mean, there was a dramatic moment where this little kid calls him from Minnesota after he ran for office and, you know, basically says he's going to kill himself. And so Milk says, no, get on a bus, get the fuck out of Minnesota, come to California, go to Chicago, go to Los Angeles, you know, go to New York, go to someplace big and live your real life. And then, of course, we found out the kid's in a wheelchair. It's like, oh God.
Punch to the gut.
Oh fuck. Okay. Well, sorry, kid. So in the movie, it's a very like, heartstrings tugging sort of scene, but it kind of brings you home that this is a real thing. This is things that people really went through, and attitudes like this have consequences.
Well, and he became the face of the fight. And once the community decided it was going to fight against Anita Bryant and the Christian Coalition and Dade County and they, you know,
the when moral Harvey majority,
when Harvey and crew et al. Decided they were going to bring the fight to them, they very consciously made sure that they were visible, or at least Harvey was visible. He wanted to make himself as visible as possible. And when he finally got elected and was in a position of moderate amount of power, he kept fighting. He's like, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to find ways to make sure I solidify my power base, but I'm not giving up. Like, this is my fight. And it should be everybody's fight, because it's not just about us. It's about equality.
Yeah. And so this movie points out that gay kids kill themselves. Now, hopefully, and I don't know if this is true or not, I hope that it's true, that in 2019, less gay kids kill themselves. But you know what? Trans kids kill themselves. And that is a fucking crying shame. And yeah. I don't understand being trans anymore, even less than I would understand being gay. And I don't understand, as an old person maybe, or in my generation, or maybe just ignorance, I don't understand the gender fluidity sort of thing. But if I would hope that if my daughter, this happens to my daughter, I mean, she's still my daughter.
Right.
Like it's going to be, you know, turns out her teenage years are probably going to be trying no matter what happens.
That's the one thing that always confused me when I would see peers that would struggle with their parents and them, but it's the same, you're the same person. They just know more of your personality that you weren't showing, but you're still the same kid. You're still their kid. You know, sometimes religion and upbringing and prejudice overpower that. Although I don't know. So, but my perception is that that drive usually to keep and protect your children doesn't get easily overridden. So I'm always amazed when I hear people that tell their parents and their parents kick them out, or their parents disown them.
Yeah, I don't understand worse.
That.
Yeah. So, well, but I do understand that there's one thing about, okay, you know, whatever, you decided you're this or whatever. Now, like I said, I'm not saying this is a choice or whatever.
Right.
But from a parent's point of view, you're like, what is it this time? Like, because, you know, a couple of years ago, you were identifying as a unicorn, and now you're identifying, you know, as gay or trans or whatever. Like, what is it this time? And, oh, by the way, look at what you're going to, like, it already sometimes sucks to be a parent, because then if your child has an interest in soccer, then you have to talk to a bunch of soccer moms and dads, or hockey, and all of a sudden you're dealing with hockey parents, or whatever the thing is. And it's like, oh, great. Now I'm going to have to tell the neighbors that my son is gay, or now I'm going to have, what, are you going to put a flag up in the car? Oh my God, you're going to have like a rainbow air freshener in your car. I can't deal with this right now. I am barely holding it together, just going to work every day and coming home, and I don't get to do hobbies of my own, and there's a camshaft in the garage. So I get that. I mean, but yeah, God forbid I would have even think about kicking my child out because they, well, we had a sort of a non-pod set of conversations between the three brothers today, setting up an action plan if any of the kids join a cult. Jason, you need to stick around because you're a very, very integral part of that that whole process.
I know. Brother Drew gave me the nicest backhanded compliment I think I've ever had. I was quite flattered.
It was a front-handed compliment.
Yeah. Okay.
No, you're the disinterested voice of reason. It's good to be the uncle.
It made me laugh out loud because I thought, ooh, that's biting, but probably also true.
Yeah, no. One thing about Brother Jay is Brother Jay, A, gets shit done.
Well, sometimes.
Yeah, no, you get shit done, you don't tolerate bullshit very well, and because you're not their parent, it probably, hopefully, will be easier to talk to you.
Yeah, I have a pretty low threshold for the bullshit, but, I suspect... I hope, I aspire to be as supportive to anyone in my family as our mother's mother, Grandma Nori, was to me, because that really was kind of the example to me of, and what I needed when I needed it. So that's the kind of level of support that I will pay back. Which is just that, like, I don't care. I'll support you. As long as you're not murdering people, then, you know, it's all fixable, mostly.
Turns out Grandma Nori was like that. That was a Grandma Nori thing.
Yeah.
But you know what? I mean, I can remember talking about it with her after you came out, And her reaction to me was that she was just very worried for you because she's like, it's not going to be an easy road. So whether or not you chose this road or not, it doesn't matter. I just see a bumpy road for him. So I wish him all the best. And I'll support him as much as I can because I know it's going to be a bumpy road.
Well, and mom empathized similarly. But for me, and I tell people when they ask about my story, because people have asked over the years what my story was. And I said, well, I was fortunate enough to grow up with who I perceived as having parents that were hippies.
Exactly.
And
funny
so
how that worm has turned.
I had this naivete that it didn't matter because I was told it didn't matter. I was raised that it didn't matter that you're good to people because you're good, because that's what we expect of you in this family, is to be good to people. So it never entered my mind that there would have been a negative consequence. And because that was in the back of my mind, I refused to allow any negative consequence. And so I stood my ground stubbornly, sometimes not to my benefit, mostly to my benefit, though. And then I just didn't back down because I'm stubborn like that. It runs in the family. I am stubborn and strong-minded, and God help you if you want to move me. So,
yeah. Well, and I know Drew has already expressed how impressed he was, like how hard it was for you that we didn't have to deal with. I mean, we just didn't have that obstacle, and how you just sort of pushed through. And I can only imagine that sometimes I just putting a big gay happy face on, whether you felt like that or not, or a big straight happy face or whatever. I mean, sometimes you just have to, I'm going to be a fucking bright shining star anyway. I don't care how you feel.
Well, certainly as I moved out and started dating, I had to just remind myself, like, it isn't always going to be like this. It'll get better. It isn't always going to be like this. And then I moved to Portland. I'm like, oh God, it is still like this. So, it was a good experience, but holy God. But I think that, back to the movie, I think that Harvey Milk did much the same, where he's like, I refuse to accept this. I understand that that's what you're telling me. And I understand that You're not going to vote with me or side with me, but I don't care. I'm still going to get my way. And you can protest and you can scream, and I'm going to scream louder and I'm going to win. So you can scream, but you just know that eventually I'm going to win. And at that time, for the community he was in, that was totally a shock to the system. And that escalated his feud with Dan White, which
not even a feud so much, just
except that there had to have been some feud that I don't buy the Twinkie defense. I don't buy that he just suddenly snapped. Like, I don't, there was some tension brewing for some time. So yeah, I don't buy the whole Twinkie thing. I had forgotten that Dan White had killed himself, though.
I remember when he got out. Because he got out of jail in, I think, 85, and he moved to a town, and the town basically kicked him out, or it made it so uncomfortable that he had to move to a second location, and then he killed himself. And that's, by the way, a sort of a sad story, but he also killed two people. So,
Yeah. And which...
And by the way, was convicted of manslaughter, not of murder.
Yeah, well, that's also a sign of the times.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So that was the tragedy that Harvey, you know, that Harvey did fight and win his elected office and win the ordinance against the fight and won the anti-discrimination for his district and eventually for the greater LA area. Is that what?
Oh, all of California because of
San Francisco. Right. So the proposition. So it certainly paved the way for much progress. But it cost him his life. Then you have to say, well, was it worth it? He would probably tell you it was worth it. I always wonder if put in that same position, where I would be. You know, it's a hard supposition.
I don't want my brother's life to end the way Harvey Milk's did, but I think America needed Harvey Milk's story all the way to the end.
Yeah.
To get where we are now.
Sure.
Because you need those kind of like martyr figures.
Right. Well, the movie made the good point of saying he was flawed, he was human, but he was also right. So you can disagree with his tactics, and you can disagree with his politics, and you can even disagree with his lifestyle, but you can't disagree with the fact that he deserves the same rights as everybody else, as does everyone.
Yeah.
And it is a tragedy that he lost his life over fighting for something that we all should enjoy equally. But again, these were the acts of a madman. I don't think Dan White was in his right mind. Although I doubt that, you know, I don't believe that he didn't understand what he was doing. I don't buy that at all.
Yeah. The fact that he snuck past the metal detectors and cold-bloodedly killed two separate people in two separate offices seems like it was less an act of passion than a calculated murder.
Yeah. If he had just shot one of them out of a fit of pique, maybe. But yeah, the deliberate walking from one office to another, that's intent. That's premeditation.
He brought a gun to work and snuck in so he didn't... to his job he used to have, because he no longer was a supervisor at that point. And by the way, of course, Dianne Feinstein plays a big role in this, because we only see her as in news footage, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
Because, and they
mention her.
Yeah, they mention her. Like, they walk past Diane's office and talk to her, but she's never there. She's kind of the boogeyman. Because, of course, Dianne Feinstein was a city supervisor at the time. She became mayor after the assassination, then became U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein.
Mm-hmm.
A big wig, let's say.
Yeah.
The thing is, about the movie... I know, we're like talking an hour and a half now.
Around, we got like 10 minutes of the movie.
Well, I mean, I don't really necessarily, we need to go point by point, but I thought, you know, Sean Penn was so good because he really did disappear into this role. And Josh Brolin is Dan White. You know, Dan White doesn't have a huge part in this movie. He just has a significant part in it.
Yeah, but Josh Brolin brought his presence across.
Josh Brolin is again, he is a solid performer.
Yeah.
He's one of our favorites here at Not in a Creepy Way. But okay, so Emil Hirsch was Cleve Jones, and he was pretty great. We have Diego Luna as over the top Jack Lira, who is probably over the top and like a guy who doesn't speak English very well, who none of Harvey's friends like, who is also Harvey's boyfriend.
When I first saw him, I thought, is he channeling Father Guido Sarducci?
It's hilarious, yes. And then again, a stunning performance of James Franco. He was great. And he actually takes, you know, he travels in this movie too. His character evolves in this movie too. You know, he starts out as a goofy James Franco. And then by the end, he's more of a, he's not buttoned up, but he's definitely changed his look from the young hippie kid that he was.
He grew up.
Yeah. And that was portrayed very well, and that's all due to Mr. Franco.
But you also have the introduction of Ann Cronenberg.
Yep. Alison Pill is Ann Cronenberg, which is great, and is her 70s perm.
Which I had not realized that Ann Cronenberg had been so pivotal.
How do you know Ann Cronenberg?
Lots of reading.
Okay. Then we have Victor Garber as Mayor Moscone, who is always solid.
Yeah. I told boyfriend Jesse, I'm like, oh my God, it's Victor Garber. And he's like, how do you know his name? And I'm like, I was a big Alias fan. Don't ask.
Oh, he's been in everything.
Yeah, he has been.
This is certainly not our first Victor Garber movie.
The funny thing is, I couldn't tell you anything else he's been in. I know we've seen him in other things, but I couldn't tell you.
Allow me. Allow me to tell you. Victor Garber. We'll go through his. He has been in more than twice the movies that Sean Penn has been in. Let's just start out with something a little bit of...
He passed away not too recently, did he not?
Lots and lots and lots of TV. Sleepless in Seattle, 93. Right. He played Mix Nuts. He was the voice of the irate neighbor, so we didn't really see him in that. he was in First Wives Club, 96. He was in Titanic, 97.
Still alive, my mistake.
Legally Blonde in 2001. He was in Tucker Everlasting, 2002. Alias, 2004, of course. 2001, I guess. Through 2006.
Yeah.
106 episodes.
Yeah.
I
love Alias.
Yeah. It's silly, but it's...
No, yeah. I have no illusion, but Jennifer Garner. I like Jennifer Garner just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, she's okay. Again, I like her more. He was in The Town, so we have talked about a Victor Garber movie. Kung Fu Panda. Argo.
Argo was a great movie, by the way.
Yeah, that's on our list.
Yep.
I have not seen it yet. I'm waiting for the movie. Ton of TV. He was in Sicario.
Okay. Yeah, he works a lot.
Yeah, 167. And I'm not even sorry I threw a speed bump in the movie because, of course, this whole program has been a speed bump about this biopic. I mean, it's hard to talk about biopics because we're assuming, and I don't have any direct knowledge that they didn't get anything that's wrong that I know of, right? There hasn't been any criticism that they got anything wrong, have they?
Well, no. I mean, the movie took plenty of creative license, I'm sure. But no, I mean, the base facts are true. I mean, he didn't get elected. He didn't get elected. He didn't get elected. He got elected. He became very powerful. He beat the proposition and established rights and then was murdered. So, no, I mean, the beats of the movie were accurate. As far as the behind the scenes and their interpersonal relationships and the different facets of the different personalities that were in and around the camera shop and in and around his life and in and around Scott's life and all of that, you know, who knows? I watched some of the special features on the DVD because I got the Blu-ray DVD for $1 from Fry's Electronics.
Wow.
Yeah. I also got Bruno for $1. So
two legendary icons in the gay community. Harvey Milk and Bruno.
There were only two deleted scenes that were included in the DVD anyway. One of which was Harvey dressed up. He did some charity thing dressed up as a clown, which was terrifying and creepy. And I'm not even creeped out by clowns, but I thought it was creepy. But in the movie, and again, who knows how real this was to life, but he said, I'll only do this for charity in the clown suit if I can keep the clown suit for an hour after. And then he ran up and down the streets on cable cars, you know, introducing himself to people, which people say was very Harvey. The other deleted scene was an early scene when they'd first moved to the Castro, and he and Scott were kind of in the apartment and he was freaking out that he'd left his life behind and wasn't sure what the future was going to bring. Other than that, there was just some documentaries about the life and times, which I didn't get through. So, but it was, I mean, there was plenty of flashbacks in this movie for me because you get to see all the old cars and you get to see, you know, the buildings and the people and the clothes, the Marantz turntable.
Yeah.
With the old cans of film.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Photoshop, which I remember growing up going to Photoshops. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry, not Photoshop, not the application used to manipulate your own photos, but Photoshop like you went to get your film developed and buy new film.
Or you went to get chemicals so you could develop film at home.
Exactly, yes. And how you had to construct the perfect shot and you had to know f-stops and know things like depth of field and light metering and things. And now you have an iPhone that will take a picture and allow you to search between like 30 frames and adjust the lighting right on the fly.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and then the iPhone X can do even more, which is incredible.
But I can't justify the price of an iPhone X.
No, I can't either.
I'm two generations behind now, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not upgrading anytime soon, especially not for $1,000.
Like, no, I haven't paid for my 8 yet. I'm not going to.
I'm fine with my 7. I am Apple's nightmare now because I'm like, nope, I'm not buying another one. And if this breaks, I might not buy another one. I might just, I don't know.
I don't like Samsung, so if that's the only alternative. Plus, I'm deep in the Apple products. I mean, I've already spent money on all the apps. I've already, you know, I just plug in the phone and it will do what I want to do. I don't want to have to make it a programming project.
Yeah, I understand. But let's see what else. Sean Penn really is an amazing actor. His facial expressions and the emotions that he brought forth were just astounding to me.
Even his voice, it was great.
Yeah, the affect.
He did all the actory things.
Yeah. And he was always smiling. I don't know if that was a Harvey thing, but he was it was rare in this movie where you didn't see him smiling, which was, I don't know if that was a conscious effort or if that's really how he was, or I mean, I don't know, but it was just something I noticed.
He won an Academy Award for this movie, of course.
Yes.
Justifiably.
Yes.
I think we have no arguments. And this one for best screenplay.
Also well-deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like I said, I was worried that it was going to be really depressing or it was going to constantly pull at your heartstrings, like overly dramatic, maudlin, maybe.
I think the movie did a good job of humanizing him and making him just letting you see, like I said, like letting you see that he was human and had plenty of flaws too. And while people like to praise him to sainthood, he wasn't a saint, but that's okay. He didn't want to be, and he didn't want people to think he was. And so he just did what he did. And that turned out to be the right thing.
And okay, so let's talk about Gus Van Sant. What do you know about Gus Van Sant? I mean, I know a couple of things, but you probably have a different perspective, of course.
I don't have a good opinion. No, that's not what I mean. I'm pretty neutral about Gus Van Sant. I can take him or leave him. I'm not overly impressed by him, but I'm not underwhelmed by him, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. What have you done for me lately, Gus Van Sant? Well, see, like, I didn't see My Own Private Idaho, which I'm told is good, but, you know, I don't know. It just wasn't my type of movie at the time. Like, how does it hold up? It's basically based on the gritty performances of Keanu Reeves and River Phoenix.
Yeah.
One who is no longer that guy anymore, and the other one who is no longer any guy anymore.
I think the thing that I always get confused by is because he does movies, but he does a lot of music videos. Or did a lot of music videos.
And yeah, so, we send videos for everybody we like, and a lot of people we don't.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, let me hear. While you're doing that, I'll actually read some. So, Drugstore Cowboy, 89.
Yeah.
Didn't see that. My Own Private Idaho, 91. Didn't see that. Elton John, Katie Lang, Stone Temple Pilots, George Michael. Then we got Even Cowgirls Get the Blues. Didn't see that. Let's see. Chris Isaac. Bowie. Then we have To Die For, the Nicole Kidman movie, which I thought was actually pretty good at the time. Then we have Good Will Hunting. He directed Good Will Hunting, which is amazing. And then we have the shot-for-shot remake of Psycho. In 98, which is like Vince Vaughn and Anne Heche, which is not necessary. And we have Finding Forrester in 2000. We've got Elephant, didn't see Elephant. Last Days, didn't see Last Days. Let's see, Milk, we've got. And then we got the upcoming, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, which is, I'm very interested to see. Are you familiar with that movie?
Uh-uh.
There's a quadriplegic cartoonist by the name of John Callahan.
Oh, Callahan is Portland.
Yeah, there you go. So, and one of the titles of one of his books is Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. So we have Joaquin Phoenix playing John Callahan.
He died, God, I'm going to say almost a decade ago, I think. I think he died in 2011, 2010. I forget. I got a laptop.
You know, Robin Williams was originally, Gus Van Sant wanted Robin Williams to play John Callahan. But we have also in the cast, Jonah Hill, Rooney Mara, Jack Black.
Oh, Jack Black. Why?
Kim Gordon, Udo Kier.
Yeah, he died in 2010, it says.
Kyle Dunnigan, Heather Matarazzo. Are you familiar with her?
Mm-mm. Not she's by kind name, anyway.
She's kind of fun. She was Heather Maserato, was first known as Welcome to the Dollhouse, but she was also like the friend in the Princess Diaries. I think she may actually have a podcast, but she's funny. She's an out lesbian who's very outspoken, but yeah, she's got the goods. But anyway, she's funny. She's a personality.
Callahan was also a songwriter. He released a CD and wrote and composed his own lyrics and sang and played harmonica and ukulele.
I'm telling you, he's the Stephen Jesse Bernstein of the cartoon world.
The record was released on Bone Clone Records and produced by blues musician Terry Robb, who also plays guitar accompaniment on several tracks with a special cameo appearance by Tom Waits.
That seems on brand.
Callahan personally illustrated the album cover. In 2018, track 14, Texas When You Go, a duet recording of Callahan and Robb, was included in the film score for Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot.
Awesome. So, okay, so let's get back to Milk real quick.
Oh, he grew up in the Dalles.
So, Brother Jay,
yeah.
What's your verdict?
This is an A movie. It has all the good things. It has good acting. It has good visuals. The story flows. The story keeps you interested. And it is just incredibly acted.
It's got good music because it's got period music.
It does have good music. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they're preaching to the choir a little bit, but, you know. What's not to like about San Francisco music from 72 to 78? Yeah, I think so too. I'd say absolutely A. Highly recommended.
Yeah.
It does have an ending though.
Yeah.
But then again, I mean, I think it's history people need to know. I mean, people need to know that to get to our place and our, you know, acceptance is always just out of our grasp, huh? Tolerance is ebbs and flows, I guess. It's part of our history. Everybody's history. Not just the gays.
and like I said, I think this movie did a good job, at least for me. I didn't see the movie as sad. I saw the ending was a little bit sad, but the movie itself was really kind of celebrating the man and his positivity and his output, which was such a permanent, long-lasting record of who he was.
Yeah. Yeah, and the movie ends tragically, but maybe not sad. I think you're right. Because he's smiling for the whole movie.
Yeah.
And he dies incredulous.
Hopefully.
I'm like, why would anybody shoot me?
Yeah, I would hope. I would hope so. I would hope that. But then I would hope that for anybody who gets shot.
Yeah, I suppose. So, hey, Drew, you're popping in we're using our time machine. So you're beaming in from another period of time to tell us what you thought of the movie Milk.
I was really surprised. I didn't know anything about Harvey Milk except that he was one of the first openly gay elected officials in a major office. And that he was assassinated. That's all I knew. I thought the movie was really good. It certainly was made in a different time than now. I think it got a lot of... Or it wanted to get a lot of mileage from straight actors playing gay roles. Which I think today would be much less of a thing.
Well, or maybe it would be a different kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because that would be criticized now, I think.
Maybe. I would hope nobody would care as much. They just seemed to. I just got a sense that the movie makers were like really smug about it. Like, hey, look how brave we are.
Oh well, there. Yeah, a lot of like public displays of affection in the movie.
We're making Sean Penn and James Franco make out on screen. Look at us.
Yeah, but everybody I thought did a really good job. James Brolin was amazing.
His name is Josh Brolin.
Sorry.
It's okay. Yeah. Jason did that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all those years of
James Brolin is amazing too.
Come on. You know. Yes. Connie Selica and Hotel.
In
come
Hotel,
on.
Yeah. And Mrs. Yeah. He's Mr. Streisand.
Yeah. Thanos. Thanos did a really great job in Mel. But I was actually really curious, Jason. I forget where you mentioned it. But you said Jesse was upset about the end of the movie because he didn't understand the beginning of the movie.
Can
you expand on that a little bit?
But the beginning of the movie where you have Diane Feinstein, right? She's talking about what
the
happened.
The actual Diane Feinstein.
She's talking about what happened in the shooting, and he wasn't really clear on what she was talking about. And then the movie goes back, and so he kind of didn't connect those dots because he wasn't really familiar with the characters.
Hmm.
And so when he got to the end, he was like, "What?"
Oh, that must have been extremely upsetting.
It was for him. It was so. So I was like, sorry. So, yeah, I think that it was enough sleight of hand for him that he felt that it was a little heavy handed. But I said, well, that's what happened. So that was just a choice in the movie making, I guess. I'm not sure.
You were always going to end at that place.
Well, in theory.
And the movie didn't even address the Twinkie defense, right?
No. There was a little bit of allusion to it, like that scene where Josh Brolin is in his underwear and kind of looks out of his window. It's supposed to portray his paranoia and the fact he's not taking care of himself. But
yeah, I thought that was a good movie. I was happy I watched it.
Excellent. Yeah, we were too. Because I hadn't seen it until I watched it for the podcast, and I was happy that I did.
Yeah, I wasn't even planning on watching it, but I think it just popped up on Amazon Prime, and I knew you guys had talked about it. So I thought I'd give it a whirl.
Excellent. Yeah, what did you think of James Franco?
He was really good.
I thought he had a lot more subtlety to his performance than I expect from the guy who ruined the Oscars that one year.
Well, he actually wanted to be in this movie, I think.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he did a really great job, especially as his character matured and he was like an older...
Exactly.
An older guy. I thought he played that really well.
Yeah, agreed. Like, his nuances were at the end, pretty much. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.